Hello, and welcome to Temporal Culture War, where we dig into what the hell was going on in America in the early 2000s while we watch one of television history's most maligned properties, Star Trek Enterprise. I'm Maddie Lubchansky.
I am Clayton Ashley.
That's true, and we're back, Clayton, after a holiday and family emergency, and then other things were happening, hiatus.
But look, we haven't been lazy or anything. We've been doing a lot of work behind the scenes, mm-hmm. a lot of in-depth research and development. We've come up with something that's really important, I think, to the entire podcast structure.
Yeah, please.
The person who is doing the episode is in the captain's chair, and the person doing the culture is the science officer. We figured it out.
That's right. That's right. So I'm your science officer for this episode.
And I'm the captain.
That's right. Oh, that's so stupid. But we got to do it now.
Science Officer Batty, what happened this week in 2001?
Okay, so we are talking about episode 11 of season 1, Cold Front, and the week of November 28, 2001 is our date and time. So I will locate us temporally in that week, which national news, another kind of sleepy week in America. You know, I think everyone's still sleeping off their turkeys, et cetera.
I got to get back in the headspace of Thanksgiving.
Our friend Lawrence Kansas is asleep in his truck, and he's got his plaid blanket pulled up to his chin, and he's just sort of snoozing off that big old turkey he ate also in the truck with his family, who all live in the truck with him. I'm just trying to develop a cosmology here of how Lawrence lives his life.
It's really good.
So not a lot happened. On November 27th, the day before this episode aired, they discovered for the first time a hydrogen atmosphere on the extrasolar planet OSIRIS by the Hubble Space Telescope, which is the first atmosphere ever detected on an extrasolar planet.
Oh, shit.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting space news.
I mean, that was the only news this month I could find, except for a couple of days before the episode aired. A freak, I don't know if you remember this because you're from the part of the country where this kind of stuff happens, and I am a rootless cosmopolitan. A freak 69 tornado outbreak occurred this week between Arkansas and Alabama, leaving 13 dead. I didn't know anything about this humongous tornado outbreak, but there was like 70 tornadoes in 2 days.
This just makes me think this is going to be a little bit of a little trot down a wholly different topic, but yep. It makes me think about the fact that, yes, I grew up in what is colloquially known as Tornado Alley, the flat place in America.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is this is a good indication of where tornadoes are headed because of global warming, which is kind of to Arkansas area, the South more. And the reason I bring this up specifically is that when they made a sequel to Twister, which did come out not that, I think it came out a little bit before this, late 90s, they made a sequel this year or last year, Twisters. And what I love about it is that it is a movie where everyone's like, why are there so many more dang tornadoes? Mm. But no one can say it's global warming.
Oh, sure. Because that would admit that anything, because that's political.
It's too political. Now, I will say that then they make a tornado like consume an oil refinery in this very unholy way that makes it feel like they're kind of trying to subtly say that it's global
subtext,
warming.
Like they're trying to get around the censors at whatever.
I'm just thinking a lot about Twisters.
Studio, sure. Making a movie called Twisters and then not letting them explain that it's global warming is like making a movie called like Death Ocean, the ocean that kills you. And it's like about the sea level rise, but no one like explains why. That's crazy.
No, they just wanted to explore tornado chasing YouTubers. That's what was important to talk about.
I mean, I think it's really important to talk about the threat facing America these days from people who use YouTube. That's certainly true. I think that's fine. So I'll talk next about music. Again, kind of a sleepy week. It's Thanksgiving. Mary J. Blige, Family Affair has a grip on the American mind.
I remember that being around.
Yeah, it cannot be extricated. We're all sitting at Thanksgiving listening to Family Affair with our families.
On repeat.
We love it. That's right. Enrique Iglesias is still hanging around with Hero. Nickelback rock is now rocketing up the charts, fully in the top 10 with How You Remind Me.
Yep.
A chilling portent.
It's coming.
Also sneaking up on us in the 20s is Shakira's Wherever Whenever, and Britney Spears' I'm a Slave for You. Two good songs, I think, that I actually like. Nothing like crazy happening with music at the moment. Nothing incredibly cursed, except for, I would say, Nickelback, which is about to sort of like plant in its hooks and bring along a bunch of its friends.
I do remember this. I was really into just foreshadowing the coming Nickelback storm.
Yeah.
We're about to get hit with 69 Nickelbacks.
That's right. In 2 days.
But I think what you're saying, though, about like those songs down in the 20s is that as much as we highlight what's here at the top 10, which some of it's quality, some of it's not.
Yeah.
But there is a lot of good stuff still there.
Yeah.
Just lower.
Yeah, there's life carries on. You know, if you have 69 Nickelbacks chasing you, that's actually a function of global warming and they don't want you to talk about it. Television I got next here. On the night that our friend Star Trek Enterprise aired, it's getting beat by our old friends 60 Minutes 2.
Yes.
Malcolm in the Middle.
Sequel to 60 Minutes.
Yeah, yeah. Malcolm in the Middle's beating it. A power block on CBS of My Wife and Kids and According to Jim are beating it. It's getting absolutely shithouse demolished, everything is, by something called Christmas in Rockefeller Center, which sounds like, again, like jingling keys for people.
Yeah.
It is, however, I will say, beating Dawson's Creek.
Hmm.
So take that, Dawson's Creek. Overall, it was a new episode. Wait. I checked.
Okay.
I was like, is this a rerun? No. No, it was a season 5 episode of Dawson's Creek.
What network was Dawson Street on? Is that Fox?
That was the WB, I believe, I want to say.
Because this was when there was still a WB and a UPN.
Yes, this is Dawson Street was on the WB.
They're going to merge.
Yeah, there's
just not yet.
Yeah, there was a West Wing episode about a UN treaty banning prostitution that also aired this night, which I'm sure was sensitive and good. fucking great. Great show. Overall that month, Enterprise does not crack the top 30 rated shows for the month.
Oh boy.
It can't even muster the numbers of ABC airing The Santa Claus. So, you know, Enterprise not doing incredible. It does not have this sort of cultural impact that, say, you and I would expect it to have from being such an incredible, well-written, well-produced, well-acted, well-shot show. It's not, you know, sometimes things don't get the sort of cultural juice that they deserve. And last up, what do you got?
I mean, the thing I think about is we did a little bonus episode that you might be able to hear soon. Ooh. About
bonus.
Star Trek First Contact. And we looked at what was like up at the top in the 90s at that time, in 96, I believe. Mm. And it was notable to me that The X-Files was there.
Yeah.
It's not that the American public was against a science fiction show being like mass entertainment and also a high quality sci-fi show being like popular enough to rank up there with the ERs and the Seinfelds. So it's not just the fact that it's sci-fi, it's Enterprise's. I mean, I guess, as you said, it's just unrecognized and it's high quality programming.
Yeah. I think it was too high quality for people to turn them off. Lastly, we've got movies. Harry Potter, whatever that is. It's some movie, Harry Potter. It's got the juice, you know, it's still number one. And number two is a new movie, Behind Enemy Lines, which I don't know if you remember that movie, but I do.
This is not one I remember.
It is a I want to tell you about it. It is a Gene Hackman and Owen Wilson joint. And it tells the story of Lieutenant Chris Burnett, who is an American naval flight officer who shot down over Bosnia and uncovers genocide during the Bosnian War. Meanwhile, the rear admiral commanding the carrier strike group to which he was assigned is struggling to gain approval to launch a combat search and rescue mission to save him. The plot's loosely based on an actual incident that occurred during the war in 1995. This sounds boring, and I don't think the movie's very good, but it's interesting to me for a couple of reasons.
Yeah.
It was a critical flop, but a modest commercial success, and it spawned a direct-to-video franchise, which I love, including Behind Enemy Lines 2, Axis of Evil, Behind Enemy Lines, Columbia, SEAL Team 8, Behind Enemy Lines, and that one was co-produced by WWE Studios, so you know it was a really quality film.
I'm guessing those are still really focused on the Bosnian War and its after effects.
Yeah, I'm sure those are all about like uncovering genocide. I'm sure it's got fucking someone of Gene Hackman's quality in it.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Maybe this was like during that time that Gene Hackman was trying a wrestling career. I don't know, which we all remember in the mid 2000s. But it was directed by this guy, John Moore, who got the job after directing Sega Dreamcast's launch commercial in 1999. So I don't know if you remember this, Clayton, because I'm a couple years older than you. But do you remember the Sega Dreamcast launch commercial? It's it features like a thief breaking into Sega headquarters to steal the Dreamcast prototype.
No.
And then she is chased through the streets of, I think, Tokyo through like an omniscient Dreamcast AI. And the chase includes a plane crashing into a skyscraper. And at the very end, she gets arrested. And you see it zooms in on the Dreamcast. You know the little red triangle that was like the on light for the Dreamcast? It zooms into that. And then there's our friend Sonic the Hedgehog, but he's 3D. And he says, we got her. And then for some reason, it like drops down. And the Dreamcast is full of all the characters that you can play on Dreamcast. And inside of there is a video game Randy Moss from the Minnesota Vikings, just like hitting on a sexy girl. And then, of course, the Dreamcast tagline that we all remember, it's thinking.
I'm trying to track this down, just and I feel like they've wiped it from the internet. Because, of course, yeah, I mean, anything that has a plane crashing to a building becomes this, like, what did they know?
Yeah. There's one of the, it was like crashing into like a communications tower, I think. But still.
I'm sorry. I'm just, my mind has been wiped by this commercial.
Yeah.
I was thinking about this movie, Behind Enemy Lines, and how it is so much they were making this during the end of the tail end of the 90s. And it happens to release here right after 9/11. And they're focused on the Bosnian War.
Yeah.
And which was a big deal in the 90s.
It was.
And I'm not going to act like I know that much about it, to be frank.
Sure.
But this is the way these action movies were searching for, like, what is something where we can be the heroes in it now?
Right.
There's not much for us to do. We don't have our big baddie. We've talked about how, like, the cartels become a villain, rogue Russians or something.
Yeah.
But terrorism was there, but not always the enemy. And then, of course, this series gets, like, the juice it needs because it's like, oh, terrorists. Now we've got a villain everyone wants to watch direct-to-video.
Like, and then they like, go to Colombia. And then it's like SEAL team shit, which you know what that's referring to. And this guy, John Moore, is, to me, sort of like really representative of like what movie culture was like in the mid-2000s. Like, after Behind Enemy Lines, he makes a movie called The Flight of the Phoenix, the really bad Omen remake from 2006, the Max Payne film of the video game Max Payne, which I played on a laptop, the game Max Payne, A Good Day to Die Hard, the really, really bad Die Hard movie, and a Pierce Brosnan movie I do not think actually exists called IT.
What?
It's just a real, like, a master of, like, 2000 style slop.
Yeah.
Other notable releases that week? Not really any. There was, I found a huge bomb called Texas Rangers, which was directed by a guy called Steve Miner, who mostly directed Jason movies.
Ooh.
But it's about, you know, the Texas Rangers, like the cowboy police, like olden times.
This cast.
And I'm going to tell you, it starred James Van Der Beek, Ashton Kutcher, Alfred Molina, and for some reason, Dylan McDermott, and also Randy Travis was in it.
What?
Playing historical guys, I think.
Wow.
And it flopped like really horrible. It made like $400,000 its opening weekend, which between that and losing to Star Trek Enterprise and the ratings on TV, what a horrible week to be James Van Der Beek. Like, dear God, like I was just doing research before, and I was not expecting this to just be like anti-Vanderbeek thought, but the week of November 28th was very anti-Vanderbeek.
This is real critical research. This is finding things that are important.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's culture. That's the sort of like the explosion of culture and news around this time. Let's call a plume of things happening that we could observe from the windows of our ship as we take our time ship around the year 2001.
God.
I'm really leaning into this being a ship, by the way, now that you've done this.
Yeah, I guess it has to be. Yes.
That's what I'm going
to
be doing.
It is time to start the engines and head for the episode, I guess. Let's go. That's what I'm supposed to say.
As Captain Archer would say so poignantly, let's go.
I want to try. Let's go.
Yeah, it's really important for the listener to see that we're both doing a hand motion at the camera.
That's what's happening.
Yeah, let's go.
We're going to talk about this episode, Cold Front. Which is, I have to admit, kind of a cool name for an episode about the temporal Cold War.
Yeah, this is like them introducing what clearly was, when they pitched the show originally, the big bad of the show. You could tell the show was going to be about this for a while, was their plan. And then 9/11 happens and they're like, no, we have to do Space 9/11 instead. Like, let's get this wrapped up as fast as possible so we can do Space 9/11, which comes much later. But it was very funny to watch this and be like, oh yeah, they so clearly this is all over the pilot. It was so baked in. They wanted to do this thing that is so stupid and confusing.
Confusing, and it feels like instead of wanting to do a prequel stuff that connects it to the rest of the series, if for some reason they thought about time travel would be this way they could kind of connect it more to stuff that happens in the future.
Yeah.
Because they never really get there, or they obviously changed plans halfway through. It doesn't amount to all that much. Sorry, spoilers.
Yeah.
But here, I'll admit that the thing I liked about this episode, and I guess it's because I've been bringing up X-Files a lot, is that they're leaning into this sort of conspiracy atmosphere.
Yeah.
And I definitely felt like, we mentioned 1996, that was like season 3 or something of X-Files, or 5. It does go into almost this time, I think it might even still be going at this time.
Oh, yeah.
And even those later seasons aren't.
To that X-Files ran until 2002, I want to say.
That's what I thought. I thought it was 2002.
Yeah, it did.
And
so it's still
had
on
a
right
huge
now.
Impact on television, to the point where I don't think I'm just imagining that the conspiracy vibes here are leaning into X-Files style television.
Extremely.
Conspiracy,
I mean, this, the very summer before Enterprise premiered, the Lone Gunman show had its 13.
Oh my God.
Millennium episodes.
Or is that another thing?
No, the Millennium was a different show.
Okay.
That aired for three seasons in the late 90s.
I forgot the Lone Gunman had their own literal TV show.
Yeah.
So here, what we have is, we start with, We got the mysterious man who I think they talk about in Memory Alpha is just the human figure. That's his name.
Yeah, he's the mysterious figure.
And don't look forward to us revealing who he is in this show, because that doesn't happen.
The human man, the humanoid figure. Sorry, yeah, the man shaped guy.
And he says some spooky stuff in the wiggly room where time doubles up or something.
It's a very wiggly room they've got.
They're talking to the Suliban guy from the first premiere episodes, and it's like, you're not going to need your night vision where you're going. I don't know. Cold open. And then when we get to the Enterprise, we get a scene with Archer, and the only thing that's really important about this scene is there's suddenly another member of the Enterprise's crew. It's not just 7 people on this spaceship. There's an 8th guy.
Is a mysterious 8th guy that they forgot to put in the previous episodes.
I'll say that I don't know how stupid I was, but I feel like when I was first watching this episode, I didn't actually think that much about this guy. I certainly didn't think they were going to take him in this direction. I figured he was a red shirt.
Yeah,
probably.
He's given the introduction of a guy that's going to die.
Yeah, so I think they did something there that made you not literally think he's going to be super important going forward, but it's still pretty obvious that he's the plot point in this episode. Yeah. And then we get the kind of other main part of this plot, which is that they find some spaceship, some pilgrims being hauled around by this guy, Captain Fraddock,
the most ornery man in space.
He's so annoyed. He's so annoyed, but never evil. It really seems like they're setting him up to be like untrustworthy in a bad way, or he's going to do something to make move the plot, because it turns out, oh, they shouldn't have trusted him. Nah, he's just kind of an asshole.
He's just like a bus driver in space. Like they make like first contact, and Archer does like the big, like, what brings you here to outer space? We're from Earth. Where are the humans? Like, whatever. And they're like, what brings you here, my man? And Fradic is just like, I am at work. Do not talk to me. I'm hanging up. Which I appreciate. Like, if I was going to work and some fucking aliens just called me on my phone, didn't give me time to get on makeup or anything, so I'm on the video call, I would also be pissed. I would be pissed off. I wouldn't want to talk to them.
He's totally in the right. It's just the way they set it up. It seems like he's going to be... No. There's nothing to suspect.
Yeah.
No malicious intent. He's just a guy who's kind of pissed to be bothered at work.
Yeah.
Also, I noted here that they're excited. Okay, he agrees to like let them kind of follow along the Enterprise, because they want to see what these religious pilgrims want to see, which is a star plume. Some sun is going to eject some
the great solar plume. Mass.
Yeah, the great plume. I just now am realizing that that's what you were referencing.
That's what I was referencing. Oh, what, do you not remember the very memorable part of the episode where they're looking at a plume that you don't see?
There's a part, I don't remember these episodes upon rewatching them, even though I watched them last year.
Yeah.
I got a little excited that there was going to be something to this.
Yeah.
This B plot. No, there's nothing to it.
I mean, you get kind of like, you know, Phlox is like a weeb for everything.
Okay, yes. We're going to get to that. Yeah, that is the
like,
B
that's
plot.
Interesting to me. It's like sitcom plot for Phlox, which I'm into.
Yes. But when they say they're going to invite these pilgrims on board, he's like, tell Chef to make something. He's I do think about Chef here getting the order from the captain, like, create a feast for some aliens we've never met before.
Yeah.
Don't know what they eat.
Yeah.
Don't know what they like. Just make a feast.
Yeah. I mean, and then I'm very much as Chef. What broccoli? Like, what are we doing? y'all got broccoli where you're from? I'll make that. I don't know.
Yeah. And then these pilgrims, they come on board. They got bumpy heads.
They
cheap out on the makeup effects, I feel like, sometimes. But this time they go all out on these pilgrims for some reason.
Yeah, they bumped these boys up big time.
Bumpy chins, bumpy foreheads.
They got bumpy, like, sideburns.
Yeah.
They got a real amount of bumps to them. Like, they're all in budget-saving hoods.
Yes.
To hide what would be more bumps that they'd have to put on. But they are severely bumpy, a bumpy crowd.
Also, I think it's really funny that they say when they're invited to this feast that Chef is preparing, and they're like, oh, we normally fast on this important religious event that happens every 7 years, but what the hell, let's eat.
But for you, the handsomest man in the world, sure.
For some reason, I wrote down here the Great Plume of Agasoria, I guess because I wouldn't remember it otherwise.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, okay, this is where I note that Phlox is into religions. Doesn't seem to matter where... He's interested in human religions.
Yeah.
There's something here where I started thinking about those people that like did the cedar and then didn't end up being any of them being Jewish. And they're we do
cedar.
This for
yeah,
fun.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I, man, oh man. Was that, yeah. It feels very like, I feel like I know a Dr. Phlox.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a very specific kind of like boomer guy who's like used to be a hippie, but now he... owns a car dealership, but is sort of just like, well, I'm just a citizen of the world, man. And
I'm spiritual, not religious.
I'm spiritual, not religious, but like, I'm just like, I'm like a seeker, and I'm always going on vacation to places with new kinds of religions that I've never done anything about. And just sort of like, yeah, I'll do like the thing where I like clap at the Shinto temple and bow down and throw the change into the big box or whatever, because I'm just like seeking. And Phlox feels very much like that. But on some level, he also just feels like he's just a weeb for the person that he has met. If he meets a person, he just turns into a weeb for wherever they are from.
Yeah.
Which I appreciate.
He's enthusiastic. I just wish this B-plot, I found something more in it. Even Phlox being the focal point of it, I just could not, I don't know, get
interested. There's no tension or interest to it, because they're just like, hey, Phlox, welcome in. And they're like happy to have him there. They're like, hey man, you want to do the chants with us? And he's like, I love to chant. And then you just watch him chant. Like, there's nothing to it.
He's very happy about it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm at least Phlox is happy. Then we get like a weird little scene where Travis is acting captain briefly. there's some other stuff that happens in the scene, but this was what for some reason was important to me, because I was like, he talks about dreaming about sitting in the chair or something. They have this conversation about that. Does Travis ever care about this? Does this ever come up again?
I don't think so.
It seemed like an odd thing. Like maybe it was setting up that like, oh, Travis really wants to be captain. It's like, I don't remember this ever being an important thing.
No, I don't think that's true. It feels like one of the many things they kind of forgot to do once they remembered that they like when they turned the show into like 24.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they just kind of forgot about all the stuff they wanted to do previously.
Yeah, that's a good theory.
When they completely reskinned the show.
Then we get another scene in the antimatter warp core room where the religious people prove to also be really scientific. They're like warp engineers or whatever.
One of them is a warp theorist.
Warp field theorist, yes. But this is also the chance where, I guess I didn't mention when the pilgrims boarded, they made it very clear that one of them was suspicious by just focusing on him and playing a weird note of music.
Too bumpy.
This guy's too bumpy.
The scene with the warp theorist is funny to me because like Tucker's like, or Trip is like, you know, like explaining what the warp core is to these aliens. And I'm like, hey man, aren't you all in space? It's like if someone picked me up in their car and they were like, hey, just so you know, what's inside the car is actually a very controlled explosion propelling the axles of the wheels, and the wheels turn, which actually moves us forward down the road. And I'd be like, yeah, man, it's a car. Like we live in the same. I've been in a car before.
Pilot getting on the intercom. Oh, this is your captain speaking. I just want you to understand that the theory of flight works by having air go above and below the wings. But because it goes slower over, it creates a low pressure. And that's actually what causes lift.
If everybody could get out a piece of paper and blow over the top of it, that will demonstrate Bernoulli's principle for everybody here inside the plane.
It is odd. But this is the chance for the suspicious guy to go over and mess with some shit. And you are clearly supposed to think that he's going to break it.
Yeah. Well, he does break it.
He does break something, but you think it's bad. We'll get back to that.
His weird CGI hand.
That was the thing I was he becomes much Glover. More focused on. It is such a weird little insert shot that makes me like, once again, think about how cool Odo was. This CGI they did back in like 93 or whatever.
Yeah.
Like they understood, I think, how to make it effective. And here it didn't feel like, does it matter that he could only reach that by making his arm rubbery? I guess it reminded us that he could do it, but
it was showing us that he was a Suliban man.
Yeah.
This guy's not normal.
The practical effect of it was like, he couldn't reach that really. I don't know.
His arm just like bent at a weird angle and became goopy and went very far. And it was like, clearly they're like, oh, it's going to be hidden behind like a grating and some wires. So you're not gonna be able to tell how shitty the hand looks. And also watching this on an old TV, it probably looked fine. But looking at it now, it's just like, man, oof. That shot probably cost like half the budget of the episode.
But anyway, there's a storm and things are getting bad. Just an aside, that's what's happening. We cut back to medical where now they're just taking the pilgrims to be like, this is an MRI. You want an MRI?
Like
you have no cancer. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Also strange.
You heard of scans?
Yeah.
Yeah, like we're in the alien future, guys. You're talking to aliens. Yeah. You're in space. They came here on a spaceship. They have a religious ceremony around a phenomenon in space, which means they've been rocking around space for a long time.
Yeah, exactly. Like you're the new ones to space. You should be asking them what's on their little ship.
Yeah, this is like a chimpanzee trying to explain a car to me.
The next thing, though, is then it starts shaking in medical because, oh, that storm, it's getting worse. And then I feel like I blanked out here for 30 seconds, and then suddenly the warp core is about to explode.
Yes.
Kind of a cool practical effect where the explosions are, like, going down in a line, and you realize it's towards that junction that our mysterious rubber guy, like, messed with.
Yeah.
And Trip is like, well, if this keeps going, we're all going to die. We're all going to explode. And then the explosions stop. And he's like, oh, actually, everything's normal. We're okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Little bit of a fun writing thing here where, what you thought was bad turned out to be the thing that saved the ship.
Mm.
I will give them credit here for doing something that kind of inverts things a little bit. I guess.
Yeah, I was a little shocked. But it just sort of... It was just sort of like a point in the very confusing graph of what the fuck is going on in this like Cold War time thing. It's just all so poorly explained.
Yeah. Then we get another Captain Braddock scene where he's really sassy.
Yeah.
He's like, no one on my ship left. The door was locked. No one said anything. But, you know, if I say I did it, well, I get a reward.
Yeah. He's really sassy. I hope he's doing okay.
Yeah. And then after this scene where they're kind of like, what the hell happened? Why is this going on? Daniels appears again after that little bit of a foreshadowing at the first scene. And this is the stuff where I kind of was enjoying the way an X-Files episode will have somebody just suddenly drop in and be like, you have to follow me now. Like it had a bit of that vibe to it. Like,
yeah, sure.
Something's going on here. You don't understand. And, you know, frankly, the audience at this point also doesn't fully understand. So it kind of works to its advantage a little bit.
Yeah.
And then Daniel starts walking through essentially the temporal Cold War, and which I realized we didn't actually get that much explanation of in that first premiere.
No.
I Archer barely just got the name of the thing.
Yes.
Without fully understanding what that implied, or I guess beyond what that implied. But here he talks about, okay, he lays it out. Daniels is fighting on the, I guess, quote unquote, human side, because he makes it very mysterious about whether or not he's fully human. But anyway,
but spoilers, he is.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't know why.
At the spoilers for the very bad show Star Trek Discovery. If you want to watch the last very bad season of the bad show Star Trek Discovery, cover your ears or skip forward 15 seconds. But he's Cronenberg. Like at the end of Discovery, he's like, I'm the guy. And then you're like, okay.
Who cares? I also saw he also makes an aside to how the idea that like, oh yeah, I'm from Illinois on Earth, quote unquote, but if that's what you want to call it, which
yeah,
I also,
like, what are you, whatever.
Memory Alpha says, yeah, it's Earth. Like, why did he say it this way? Anyway,
bizarre.
He lays out that the temporal Cold War in the future, any civilization with advanced enough to invent time travel realized how dangerous it was. And they all came together with the temporal accords and decided it could only be used for research. As in, yeah, like,
here's some guys taking notes of them building the pyramids at Giza.
That's okay. That's what's important, I guess. It's time travel, so it's so complicated and doesn't make sense. But the idea that like you could all just agree, to not do this thing that changes time. Okay.
Bizarre.
And he also shows off his like super hologram, this whiz bang technology, and then suddenly what I thought was a pretty cool conspiracy scene where he's being so like. The actor doing Daniels was doing a good job of conveying that, like, he's really serious. Some really bad shit is happening. He needs Archer to understand it.
Yeah.
And then it gets really silly with these hologram graphics.
And he's also like, we are from here. And he points to one time and he goes, they're from, I think, I don't know, maybe over here. And it's like, I'm familiar with how time works. You could say, like, we're from 900 years in the future and they're from 500 years in the future. You don't have to point to me on a big thing spinning around my head.
Yeah.
To explain that you're from the future and they're from an earlier future.
Definitely a case of them like being on a green screen and they're just like, just point to something. They're going to work it out in post.
Uh-huh. But the mysterious man-shaped men are the wiggly guys. Are the other side of the Cold War, right?
And they don't have this the good time travel technology that all the other people have, I guess. All the other people in the Accord.
Yeah. Yeah.
They can just send messages back. They can't send their own people back.
Yeah. They could appear in a wiggly fashion.
Only wiggly. And so this ends with him basically being like, you can tell Archer's like, I got to tell someone because this is a lot for me to just do on my own. And Daniel's like, fine, just don't tell too many people. Also, I guess the whole point here is the reason I'm here and I need your help is that there's someone on this ship who may or may not have changed the timeline and he's after me.
Yeah.
So you need to help me find this guy. And, you know, Archer's like, well, then I need some help. So we get the scene where Archer tells T'Pol and Tucker about it.
Yeah.
And we get this line that I kind of like, again, very X-Filesy. They put T'Pol in the Scully role. She's the very scientific lady who is nonetheless like, this is bullshit. Science doesn't work. Like time travel doesn't work. The Vulcan science directorate says there is no such thing as time travel.
We figured this out.
And it was just like, oh yeah, they can't escape the X-Files thing of like, we got to put the smart lady in the position of actually, you know, the audience would be like, don't you see how dumb you are about this? You don't know. A little bit there, but I do think it's a good focal and it kind of makes sense the way this crew works, that they're convincing T'Pol of some things. Don't be so Vulcan all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, they're turning her into a Republican.
Exactly.
It's very important.
Global warming is not real.
Yeah. They're in space. It's pretty cold.
And then they have this serious discussion about what to do. Can they trust Daniels? Is Daniels making this up? But then we're interrupted because it's geyser time.
That's right.
Geyser's about to go off.
That's right. Space is about to come everywhere and we have to watch.
Because we have to have a B plot on this episode for some reason. Anyway, we're back to the conspiracy stuff.
Yeah.
Daniels gets his scanners ready. He's asked them, like, can I use your ship to do some scanning that'll help me find this person who's after me, this Suliban? I think
yeah.
he did.
Oh, Daniels also says, like, yeah, he can't find the Suliban himself.
And also critically, he said the Suliban is Silic, the guy you fought with in that season premiere, who was not named Silic apparently in the premiere episode. So we're also kind of establishing, like, if the humanoid man guy,
the man-shaped man, the mysterious dude-shaped guy
is head honcho of the villains, that Silic is his, like, main henchman.
Yes.
And is the actual person they're going to interface with a lot to represent the evil temporal Cold War people.
Yes.
So that's also kind of important for this episode, establishing that. So anyway, they've got a... Daniels is getting his scanners ready, and we have to, like, show he has some future technology here, because when they need to quickly change something in a hard-to-access panel or something in the engineering section, he puts on a little, like, plastic knuckles. It looks like weird techie brass knuckles, except they're plasticky. He puts this on, presses a couple buttons, and then he can, like, ghost through the wall.
Yeah.
I guess still doesn't impress T'Pol enough to think time travel works, but whatever. Then suddenly... Silic is in Archer's room.
Yeah. The dog sees him first.
The dog. Yeah. Oh, you're right. Importantly, this is kind of a important little Porthos scene.
Huge for Porthos, who's not been getting a lot of heat lately on the show.
I was looking. There was an actor I thought later, like an extra that I thought maybe I recognized. So I was checking the like uncredited guest list. And on the Memory Alpha's uncredited guest list, they have the dog actor on there.
What's the dog actor named?
I didn't keep this open.
I'm on Porthos's Memory Alpha page right now.
I bet there's a bunch of dog actors.
He was played by Breezy, Windy, and Prada.
Nice. So it was one of those three.
Prada is a... Yeah, sorry. I'm reading from the Memory Alpha here. Prada is a beagle who portrayed Porthos in 13 first season episodes of Star Trek Enterprise. Prada received no credit for his appearances.
Wow.
He also was the Tobey Maguire dog in the film Cats and Dogs.
Oh, interesting.
Isn't that exciting? You think Breezy and Windy are related?
Yeah, I mean, they probably, to make the dog look similar between scenes.
Breezy and Windy took over after Prada departed the show after the first season for, I assume, credit problems.
So, okay, this scene where Porthos is a star, it alerts Archer, but luckily for Archer, Silic is not there to, like, kill him.
Yeah.
Interestingly, he's there to talk and stir this conspiracy pot a little bit more by being like, you don't know who Daniels is. And they're all preachy. They're all like, we decide who has time travel and we're not going to let you have time travel. And
yeah,
I don't know. I guess that's his big push.
Yeah. My father shaped dad told me that I'm allowed to do whatever I want with the time travel device, actually. So,
I don't think
Daniels is giving you a weird Glover 64 hand. Is he? No, he's not. But I could.
And he's asking Archer to give him, reveal who Daniels is. Because he knows it's somebody in his who's on this ship, somebody in his crew. Archer is pretty good at keeping a stony face about it.
Mm-hmm.
Until T'Pol calls in and messes it all up by revealing that Daniels is working with them.
Stupid T'Pol.
Yeah.
This is why you don't have a woman on a ship.
Yeah,
bad
exactly.
luck. According to old sailors.
But Silic quickly just, he's like, ahaha, stuns Archer for some reason.
Silic stuns Archer and then like zips out of there.
Could have killed him? I don't know. I guess he's preserving the timeline in some way. But now they've got to find Silic. They rush to Daniels's room and his future device is missing. And oh no, wait, sorry. We can't continue with this interesting plot line because there's a plume.
There's the plume.
There's a big plume. Anyway, Silic gets bendy in a, I think, a much better use of his rubbery powers. He gets all bendy and goes in a little crevasse into a part of the ship no one else can get to.
Yeah.
Except we established this, that Daniels had two pieces of future tech, and I guess he left this one with Trip for some reason.
Yeah.
And gives it to Archer, who ghosts through and pursues Silic. They get in a fight that is notably bad and dark because it's a cramped space, and it's even noted on Memory Alpha that they're like, the guy who shot the scene is like, yeah, it's hard to shoot a fight scene in a tiny, cramped, dark space.
Did we skip over the part where Daniels explodes?
Did I?
I think we zipped past Daniels exploding, Clayton.
Just, I can't believe, okay.
It's okay. Yeah, like right before this happens, like Daniels like has like a Silic detector.
Yeah.
And he detects Silic, and then Silic is like, I hate you so much, and he makes him explode, and then all the body parts like disappear magically.
I know it was,
and
like,
then Silic goes wiggling away.
Daniels explodes like he's a weird hologram.
Yeah, Daniels explodes like he's not real.
Like he's a dish, and I kind of liked how weird it was, and that they don't get much into it, except like, I think Trip is like, now do you believe me?
Like, this guy explodes, and instead of being like concerned for him, Trip is like, yeah, pretty crazy, huh? You definitely, people don't explode like that where I'm from.
Not,
Florida.
Not this time. I guess I did also skip over the fact that, as you mentioned, Phlox has a really moving moment where
chance.
It's just boring. But yeah, we get this bad fight that Archer manages to, like, I guess, stop Silic, slow him down, because then Silic is like jumps up through a hole in this tiny room that eventually leads to a room with an escape hatch. But before Silic can get away, Archer blows up his device, the future device he stole from Daniels that apparently was important. I don't know if his main mission was just killing Daniels and this was secondary. He's pissed off about it. He says that Archer has potentially ruined his own future.
Yeah.
But then I don't know, because he says that I saved you, Archer doesn't just shoot him?
It's bizarre. I think maybe that's why, because he was like, he still doesn't know what Silic wants. It's not clear.
And I guess,
and Silic doesn't even seem to know. He's just obeying the man.
And maybe Archer doesn't fully trust Daniels yet, which is,
I mean,
fair.
Like, I wouldn't. The guy gave up a lot of information very quickly for seemingly no reason. This is the sort of thing where I'd be really bad at being in a sort of paranoia thriller situation, where if I got one guy who shows up and tells me a bunch of stuff and says, like, watch out for this other guy, and then I meet the other guy, and he's like, well, you should be watching out for the first guy. The thing that I do is I get both guys and I say, can we all just sit down and can you guys talk to each other? Exactly. And I'm going to watch, because I do need to know what's happening. I don't want to be, I don't have the mental acuity or capacity, or like, it stresses me out too much. I would just be like, this is a problem that could be solved easily with communication. So then they should just talk to each other, and I think that would solve a lot of problems.
It's it kind of seems like this is a problem between you two. And if you just sat down and sort of
be like the ship's counselor down here, maybe. And we could all just talk about it, or like you guys talk about it with them, and then I'll talk to you afterwards and you tell me what you came up with and you tell me what I have to do to save the future or go to the pyramids. I'm not straight on it, but just that's where I'm at with it. I think I would do horrible in the Pacula universe. You know, you put me in the parallax view. I'm opting out.
I would probably just go with a more ridiculous sounding one, cause it sounds like more fun.
That's true. I'm afraid of Mr. Wiggles. I'll say I don't like, I am making fun of him a lot for the way that he's shaped, which is of course a man, and the way that he moves, which is of course wiggly, but I am sort of very much afraid of the wiggly voice, man. I don't like him. When he's on screen, I am uncomfortable.
Yeah, I wish that amounted to something.
Listen.
I should say this just because it's fun to note every single time, I guess, the mysterious man-shaped man is on this, is that apparently what they were building towards was that it was future Archer.
Oh, that makes sense.
They never got that in the show. This is totally like from the book I read, which is kind of an oral history, where they're just like, yeah, I think that was our idea at some point. But like you said, everything went off the rails after they went full Florida 9/11.
Yeah.
But okay, not much left happens in this episode. Silic opens up the like pod bay hatch, this huge door that they have on the Enterprise. Yeah. This feels like the era.
I think it's the launch bay.
The launch bay.
So it's like where like the pod leaves from.
There were no shuttle pods. In fact, the Memory Alpha said this is the first episode of Star Trek Enterprise without any shuttle pods in it.
Wow.
Interesting. It's super interesting fact.
Incredible.
But it seemed like a weird thing. It opens up, it sucks all the air out. Archer has like a weird tussle where he almost gets pulled over, but then somehow just gets a bunch of strength again and hauls himself back up, even though the door is still open and there shouldn't be any more air in this room. But he drops the future device. It seems like that was the only important thing, is that when he was in mortal peril hanging over this hatch into space, his little, you know, ghosting device flies out and, oh no, we lost it. But then he's fine. He hauls himself back up. He runs to the control panel and closes the door. It just was strange stakes to me.
Yes. A muddy episode plot-wise. And then, oh yeah, and then they seal off Daniels' room.
Yeah. Oh, so like, he gets in his little escape pod because a Suleiman ship appeared and they don't do anything about it. And it leaves and they don't do anything about it. Because again, Archer's like, he can go. Okay. Yeah. He's okay. So confused. He just doesn't know what to do. And then, yeah, we get that. Yeah. He and orders the security officer, what's British guy, to like Tucker. Seal it off.
Nope, not Tucker. Reed.
Reed. Thank you.
Yeah.
He tells Reed, seal it off. They put a big chunky lock on there. The music gets all spooky.
It's very much a like Twilight Zone or X-Files ending.
Exactly.
Where it's just this long shot of the sealed door. But I was thinking about it and I was like, why did they, because they're like, why not go look in there?
Yeah.
Like seal it off. Because I think it's like, so they can be like later, like we found a device. Yes. Yeah.
I remember this episode. I was like, why did they do the, oh, right. There's an episode where he like is told there's something in there that he should go get.
Yeah. And it's like obvious that they just want to like have a depository of like future stuff just in case they need to go find something under his mattress. Whatever.
They really heavily signpost it in this way. And in a way that does feel very much like X-Files, except this would be an X-Files episode where we like, you know, Mulder has killed some living computer virus or something. And then we focus on a computer monitor and then some little like code appears and it's like, oh, did he actually kill it or not? Like,
yeah.
But there's nothing here. It just looks at the lock and the music gets spooky.
Yeah.
So I don't think this is as bad as that episode we watched before this one.
No, this is not the worst episode of Star Trek Enterprise that I have watched.
Congratulations, I'll say that.
Yeah, you deserve to have beaten Dawson's Creek in the demo. We're proud of you, Star Trek Enterprise. I think you're doing so good, sweetie.
Can we please get a Shran episode again?
I think we're still pretty far out from another Shran. I will say, I believe, looking at the list of episodes of the first season, next week is a sort of a Phlox bonanza.
That's good. Thank you. Thank
so that's
that.
Like the next best thing after an indoor after a Shran.
Warms
next
my heart.
Next level down for me is a big heavy Phlox. A dose of Dr. Phlox.
We need the doctor.
If I saw Dr. Phlox and I told him I was depressed, what he would prescribe to me is a hefty dose of Dr. Phlox himself.
Well, you can look forward to that on our next regular episode. But if you'd like to hear more, either by the time this episode is up or very soon, we will have a little Patreon where you can give us a couple bucks and we'll give you a bonus episode every once in a while.
Yeah, I will for sure redirect when we get the Patreon up. I will redirect temporalculturewar.com to the Patreon so you'll know it's there. When it's there.
And then you can, I think that there'll be a way to leave comments on posts and it'll be a bit more of a community, but you know, help us cover some hosting fees. That's all we're asking.
That's all we want. Yeah.
Because we do enjoy talking about the show for some reason.
I do think about the show a little too much, which is upsetting and it is bad for me and my mental health, but we soldier on.
We soldier on.
That's right.
Well, thank you, Science Officer Maddie.
Yeah, thank you, Captain Clayton.
Until next time.
Yeah, I was going to say, and as always.
And as always.
Let's go.
Let's get out. Let's go.
Let's go. Bye.
Bye.